guest this episode, Christian Espinosa, has some stories to tell. And specifically, he shares three magical moments in his life. And guess what? Each changed him in ways that he is still trying to navigate. Abraham Maslow said, "In any given moment, we have two options. Step forward into growth or step back into safety." And I don't know how you feel about it, but change and growth can be seriously hard. And sometimes there's a lot of suffering that's attached. But always, when I'm on the other side, I look back and I'm grateful. Seriously grateful for how my spirit and soul were stretched. It's not a fun process, and I do a lot of whining while going through it. But honestly, those periods of change have led me to where I am today. Still trying to figure it out. And that's funny, right? I think we all think there's going to be this day where we have all the answers, where we can tell others with confidence how to figure their own lives out. But here I am, still trying to figure mine out. I really do believe that's going to be a lifelong process. Now for my guest this episode, Christian Espinosa, he's a veteran, a blood clot survivor, and a successful entrepreneur that built and sold a cybersecurity company. He's the CEO and founder of Blue Goat Cyber, a 24-time Ironman triathlete, and 2 times best-selling author. And he's a skydiver, a mountain climber, and adventurer. I mean, my goodness, what does he not do? Just like a lot of my other guests, he's grabbing life by the horns and absolutely living large. But it was the 3 different stories that he shared this week that really got me. So here we go, my interview with Christian Espinosa.
I like Hawaii. I was hiking this Mauna Loa, the mountain there. I was going this hike. And I normally hike super fast because after that big goal we talked about, I'm like, I'm going to tag the summit and get back as quick as possible. You know, I'm going to track it on my watch. And that's normally my modus operandi, is to go as fast as I can and get it done. But for some reason, that day, I was hiking. There's a big rock there, and it's a rock you could sit on. And this voice just said, "Sit on that rock." And I'm like, why do I want to sit on this rock? I just started the hike. It's like not even a quarter mile in. But I paid attention and I sat on the rock. I would introduce myself as somebody that likes to take risk, calculated risk, and tries to get the most out of life. So when I say take calculated risk, I have a business. It's my second cybersecurity business I'm trying to grow. I write books, you know, which is putting myself out there. I do public speaking. I do extreme sports like skydiving, mountaineering, Ironman triathlon. So there's a theme in my life where there's a lot of risk. And there really, I feel like if I'm taking those risks, it forces me to be uncomfortable and to grow and to get to the next level. And I feel like through growth, personal growth specifically, I can become a better human being, not just for myself, but to anybody around me, on my team, my partner, my family, anyone I interact with.
All right. Well, you had me terrified at extreme sports. So I'm guessing, I just want to ask how did you get into these and what is it about them that really compels you to participate?
I first did skydiving in the military. I got my free fall wings. It's 5 jumps. And after that, when I got in the military, I did commercial skydiving. I've got about 300 jumps. And I like the people that are attracted to this sort of activity, whether it be skydiving, mountaineering, you know, Ironman triathlon, adventure racing. I like the people and I like the challenge. There's always something new to learn. And I guess in some regard, when the stakes are super high, there's not a lot of margin for error. So it forces you to be present and on your A game and to really understand what you're doing. And it's fun, you know, jumping out of an airplane and flying for like a minute or so is pretty cool.
I do have to say, I don't know if you saw the Charlie's Angels remake with Drew Barrymore and Cameron Diaz. And they had like the first 15 to 20 minutes, something, maybe 10, was this whole skydiving scenario. Did you see that?
I did not, no.
Oh, dear. And basically, I mean, it was so, I thought, okay, that's why there are Charlie's Angels in the world to do this. So they basically, there's a guy on a plane, he's got a bomb attached to his body, and they basically, it's not a huge jumbo jet, but it's a pretty big, they open it, they grab him, throw him out of the plane so he doesn't bring the plane down. And then in the air, they take the bomb off. Then, because they're classy, they land with their parachutes in a speedboat that's waiting below them. And I thought,
oh, nice.
Is this possible? Of course, they make it look super easy, but I thought to myself, wow, I hadn't even considered that you could do something like this. But it's Charlie's Angels, so of course. And, you know, there's always that scene and, you know, I don't know, Magnum PI, all these action adventure shows where people have to jump out of airplanes and they pull their chute and then, oops, doesn't work. Then they pull the reserve chute and they're like, oops. And then it's like a whole thing. How do we fix this before we get below, you know, where the chute's going to be effective? So anyone who jumps out of a, needless to say, I will never jump out of an airplane. That is something, first of all, I don't fly because I'm so terrified of planes. But second, like jumping out, I, you know, I have nightmares sometimes and they always involve, you know, trying to fight someone for the last parachute on the plane that's slowly going down. So I have to say to you, kudos for being, for having the guts to do it, I guess.
That's a pretty interesting nightmare you have there. It's very explicit.
I know. I've tried to think, what does this mean? What am I afraid of? I'm not sure, but yeah. And then the mountaineering, I mean, honestly, you have to be in incredible shape to do that. Yeah. I remember just watching people train to do Everest and I thought, good night, Irene, I would never be able to do that. And it's, you know, do you climb as well?
Just mountaineering. I mean, I do some rock climbing, but not like hardcore or anything. Yeah, I like to, there's also the travel element of like mountaineering. You go to cool places. I climbed Mount Elbrus in Russia. So that was a cool experience. And it's teamwork and leadership and skills and, you know, managing the risk. And mountaineering is definitely one of the hardest things to do because you've got the cold weather. There's no aid stations like in a marathon or an Ironman triathlon. It's just you and your team. You got to tie all these knots with gloves on or you get frostbitten and carrying a heavy pack and you're going up with not a lot of oxygen and crampons on. And yeah, it's the challenge, but it's also the balance because, you know, it's easy to get caught up in something like summit fever. And you summit when you don't have enough resources or the weather's coming in and that can cost you. You know, I have a guy I met that lost part of his nose, two of his fingers and part of his ears because he decided to go for the summit when he shouldn't have. So it's, you know, it's a bad choice. And I think in life, it's very similar. We sometimes think we should go after something when there's all these signs telling us not to do it. And I've gotten a lot better listening to the voice in my head, which has never been wrong.
I was going to ask, you know, since you obviously have such a passion for doing all these, you know, kind of what society would call extreme sports. When you were a kid, were you just getting in trouble all the time, you know, just doing daredevil things and your family's like, oh my gosh, where is he this time? You know, is he spelunking in that cave? Is he skydiving already? Like, were you that kind of kid?
I guess I didn't really think about it too much, but yeah, I had a BMX bike and we would make these big jumps and try to jump as far as we could. I remember going to the road really down this hill one time and I got out of control and hit this car. It was like parked, flipped over the car. And I even remember, like, we would do these, set these jumps up and have other kids lay under us to see if we could jump over them and stuff. So yeah, it was pretty, pretty crazy. And there's a mountain, there's a hill. I grew up in California, and we would take these pieces of cardboard and try to stand on the cardboard and slide down the mountain, which is kind of cool too. So yeah, I guess I did do a lot of, kind of dangerous things growing up. I didn't really think about it till just now though.
That's actually really funny. And I just love it because I grew up in the time of Evel Knievel, and yeah, everybody was talking about how, you know, these daredevil stunts and, you know, is he going to make it? Is this too crazy? Is it too insane? But I remember as a kid, you know, just looking at it and just being scared, but also super inspired that someone would do these things. You know, and then of course, and then this was kind of before, you know, let's just throw out Mission Impossible where, you know, he rides a motorcycle off a cliff and then parachutes to safety or something. You know, of course, that's with a whole bunch of, you know, stunt people and safeguards and all that stuff. But Evel Knievel was doing it without all that stuff. And there was a real chance of potential injury. So, yeah.
I grew up in a very chaotic family. My mother's addicted to pain meds and other substances, and we grew up very poor. We moved from California when I was 12 to from Riverside, California, which is a suburb of LA, basically, to a small town in Arkansas with a population of 800 people. And there's a lot of, you know, car wrecks and weird people over at the house. And it was pretty chaotic. My mother's always getting arrested. She was in jail a lot. And I didn't really grow up in a religious household for a while. There for a while, my stepfather was Lutheran in California, and I went to church with him a few times. And then when I became a little bit older in Arkansas, I would say 16, I joined this non-denominational church and would go pretty much every Wednesday and Sunday morning and Sunday evening, I think is when they had the services. So I would go there to this non-denominational church. And then I would read the Bible quite a bit back then. I was just trying to figure out, you know, about my circumstances with my mother and the poverty and, you know, just trying to like really figure the world out, I think.
I was going to say, you seem super resilient. You know, I was in, let's see, last year I was in Eureka Springs and Bentonville. Up there. Yeah. I house sat for a friend way out in the middle of nowhere in Arkansas. And then on my drive back, I went through Eureka Springs, and it's just so remarkably gorgeous there. Where you were, was it also equally beautiful, like lots of nature?
It is equally beautiful. Arkansas is very beautiful. I was in Clarksville before that, Knoxville. It's in the northwest part of Arkansas. I just remember there's a lot of ticks. It is beautiful, but coming from California, I'd never seen a tick before. And I remember like walking through a field and having ticks all over me. You know, it's something I had to get used to in Arkansas.
You know, you're always hearing these days about Lyme disease and that it's everywhere. Yeah. So you seem to have escaped unscathed, I'm guessing. But OK, I would have freaked out when I grew up in Pakistan for part of my childhood. And we had a Pakistani street dog adopted us and ended up living with us. And my mom wanted us to have pets. So we had this Pakistani street dog who was probably half feral, to be honest. But I remember, you know, she got out once and then came back, and she was covered with, as a kid, you're like, what is happening here? Ticks everywhere. And it was like a game to get them off her body, which was also you're like the most gruesome, disgusting thing you've ever seen in your entire life. But it is effective when you hold a match head. The ticks are like, and they run away. So, you know, I always have that image in my mind because, you know, I have a friend in New York who goes hiking and she said, oh gosh, you know, the ticks here, they're totally crazy. And then Lyme disease, like people can't get out of bed. And then I was just in Duluth, Minnesota, and they're like, the ticks here, be so careful, like dress like you're going out to the Arctic so the ticks don't get out. But I love that you're just a kid and you just come back and you're covered in them. How did you get rid of them?
Yeah, there was a pond by where I was walking the first time. And I was like, I'm just going to jump in this pond. And the pond was disgusting, but it got all the ticks off. I was like in the water and the ticks, you can see them floating in the water. I'm trying to get away from them as they all come off me and they're floating on the top of the water. It was like literally like probably 100 of them, you know, just floating there. And I was like, got in and kind of went the other way across the pond. And then I thought, okay, now what? I got to cross this field again. There's going to be more ticks. So I just ran across the field to try to get back to like a road or, you know, some concrete or somewhere where there wouldn't be as many ticks. Yeah.
You've totally brought up, I'm bringing up all these old movies. Did you ever see the movie Stand By Me where the kids, they jump into that, was it a pond or a lake, and they come out and they're just covered in not slugs, but
leeches.
Yes. Yet another scene in my life where I'm like, I'd never want that to happen to me. And so you're telling this story and I'm like, oh my God, he's going to say he got out and there was leeches all over him. But it sounds like that's not what happened. Thank goodness.
No leeches. No, fortunately.
Thank God. I don't know. It's how many really gross things can we talk about in this conversation? So. Yeah. You know, Arkansas, as you said, is like an incredibly beautiful place. And also just the topography, the geography, it varies so widely throughout the state. And as a kid, at least for me, one of the things that was really enchanting for me when we came back to the States was I loved just I like read the Scarlet Letter in high school up in this tree that was so tall. Mm-hmm. My mom cut the branches off so I couldn't climb it anymore because she was scared that I would fall and die. But I remember, you know, just being this sense of nature, just being all around me and just being very life-giving and sacred. And did you experience that where you were, where you grew up in Arkansas?
I did. I spent as much time outside as possible, despite, you know, how humid it is in the summer. And I'm very, I think what's restorative to me is nature. And that's where I go to kind of regain my balance. If I feel like I'm a little bit out of balance or I'm not quite focused on the right thing, I'm worried too much, I just go in nature. And that even in Arkansas, I mean, in California, I would climb up that hill that way you would use those cardboard things and go down and just sit up there at the top of the hill and overlook my house. And, you know, I could hear the chaos and loud music from my house from the top of the hill, but it gave me a perspective and just sitting out there with the wind and the birds, you know, and just all that. It really made me feel like this thing I'm going through is not that big a deal.
And I did want to say, I have a very, very dear friend from high school whose parents are just, you know, her mother helped raise me a little bit. I love them so deeply, even still. But, you know, I grew up, went away to college, you know, worked in the corporate world for a little bit and then came back to visit the family. And in between, I think that it had been maybe 10 years, maybe 12. Her mother had, and this was so long ago, her mother had had a really significant back injury. And, you know, unbeknownst to anyone at the time, let alone my friend or her mother, you know, they gave her pain medication. And before she knew it, she was addicted. And this was not part, I mean, nobody could have predicted this. They would have never even thought this was possible, but it is something. I mean, according to them, like it crept up on her and them. And so now, even though she has back problems still and is in incredible pain, she can't take pain meds anymore because that addiction is still there. And so I think it's helpful to understand that sometimes these things, these addictions, these unexpected events, they creep up on us when people aren't understanding how addictive, because back then I don't think they understood how addictive pain pills could be. This was probably right. in the '90s that this happened. Mm-hmm. But her mother is still struggling with it. It's a horrible, insidious thing to happen to anyone. So I'm sorry to hear that about your mom, but I did want people to know that sometimes these things happen and nobody plans for it or even can comprehend that it's a possibility.
Right. Yeah, it slowly kind of takes over your life, you know, but it's so slow that you don't realize it until later you're in this, the world of addiction. And you kind of wonder how I got there, you know? Yeah.
So I just love that vision of you, you know, taking time for yourself, climbing to the top of that hill. You could still hear what was going on in your house or in your neighborhood, but you had alone time, which I think, you know, for children who are creative and which it sounds like you absolutely were and are, children who are creative or sensitive or open to possibility, have huge imaginations. We need that time away. We need to like get out of the situation that isn't feeding us or that is really heavy. And nature is the perfect place to find solace and kind of commune with things that are other than what's happening in our immediate context, you know, our family situation. So kudos to you for being so young and knowing to do that.
Well, thank you.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit. I mean, you gave me like a list at the beginning of all these things that you are involved in. And I kind of went off on this tangent of extreme sports because they secretly terrify me. But I would love to hear about your, you know, you said you're an author. And so what have you written? I'd love my listeners to find out just what your creative mind has come up with.
Yeah, I've written two books. I'm working on my third right now. The first book was about my entrepreneur journey with my cybersecurity company. It's called The Smartest Person in the Room. And it's really about what I feel like was the majority of my problems in my first company. And I think it's a majority of the problems in cybersecurity and high-tech industries is there's a lack of emotional intelligence. There's a lot of super highly rationally intelligent people, like high IQ, but very low EQ. And that inhibits communication with clients, inhibits collaboration amongst the team, because everyone wants to feel significant. And if you think you're smarter than other people, like you're the smartest person in the room, your ego is going to find ways to prove that, which doesn't make for a meaningful conversation. And it doesn't make for good collaboration. So when I looked at my company, my first company, the problems I had, like 99% of them, were because people didn't have those emotional intelligence or that those people skills. So I worked to fix that in my company. And the seven steps are what I wrote the book about, the things that actually worked to fix the culture of my company and add some emotional intelligence or EQ to already highly IQ individuals. So that's my first book. My second book, The In-Between, Life in the Micro, is really more of a focused memoir about where I feel like I've got things right and where I've got them wrong. I tend to be, you know, quote, high achiever. I go after these big macro goals. And when I've reflected on my life, I do a lot of reflection. I realize that between where I am and that macro goal are all these moments, these micro moments. And often I got so hyper-focused on this macro goal that I ignored somebody right in front of me and a relationship fell apart, or I ignored my health and it fell apart. So I'm trying to be better at balancing, going after this big goal and paying attention to things right in front of me, because I believe a book should be transformational to the author as well as anybody that reads it. So it's a constant reminder to be present, appreciate the micro moments, and show up with some intention and add value to those moments. And something I realized as well is sometimes if we get these blinders on and go for this thing, we might miss an opportunity right in front of us that makes us realize, you know, this thing I'm going after, I don't actually want to go after anymore. So you change the direction based on something that happens in the present.
Love to hear a story. The main gist of this podcast is I ask every guest, have you ever witnessed or experienced something that you consider to be magical or miraculous? Something that maybe changed your life or changed the life of someone else that you know. But yeah, anything, and it can be more than one story, anything you'd like to share.
Yeah, there's quite a few. I wrote about one of these moments in my second book, The In-Between, a car accident that I witnessed, which solidified the reason to write the book. Because I said, if people get hyper-focused on a goal. And in that moment, there's a blue car, and a black truck, and the blue car went through the intersection, and the black truck T-boned it. And it's a pretty serious accident. And we were behind the black truck, and we didn't, the black truck got pushed back and hit us, my girlfriend and I, but I was able to back up a little bit so it didn't like hit us too hard. And it was right after the accident, this woman got out of the car, and she had like glass falling off of her, looked like her leg was broken. She was in shock. And I'm not sure where she was walking to, but my girlfriend, who's a nurse, and I, we got out, and we're the only two people that got out of our car to help at this busy intersection. Everyone else just sat in the car, like filming it. And she caught the woman before the woman like fell to the ground. And, you know, I asked the guy in the truck if he was okay. He was all right. And then the woman, the only thing she cared about was calling her husband. She kept screaming to call her husband. And she didn't have her cell phone with her. So she gave me the number, and I called her husband on my phone and kind of relayed the scenario and, you know, in as calm a manner as I could. I've been in sort of these situations before, and then let her talk to her husband. But it's just interesting, like in that moment, she thought she wasn't sure, you know, about her life. The only person she cared about was her husband at that moment. It's like all the other things, the distractions we make up in our life, they all just like disappeared. So that made me want to write the book. It solidified the writing on that topic. And then the thing that I found interesting and also a little bit disturbing was only one person out of probably 20 cars in the intersection got out and asked if they could help. And I asked her to call 911. Everybody else, they just sat there in the car. And I'm thinking, man, as a fellow human being, if I'm in an accident, I hope somebody will come out and try to help me like I did and my girlfriend did and the other woman. But other than that, people just acted irritated. They were filming the car on their cell phone or filming the scene. Yeah, that was the reason I wrote the book. And I felt like a voice, you know, told me like, this is what I need to write the book about. Something I struggle with for the majority of my life, I've always felt alone. And I was invited to by a shaman to do this ayahuasca ceremony in the jungle of Mexico. And, you know, I've never been someone to just go try something without having some intentionality behind it. And I felt like, you know, the shaman invited me. He saw something in me that, because not everyone gets invited to these things. It's like invite only. It's not just like an experience you can sign up for. So I went to this ayahuasca ceremony. You had to wear all white. It's super formal. It was a Brazilian type of ceremony. It was all in Portuguese. So we had to sing in Portuguese. And the women were on one side, the men on the other. You had to do these certain dances in a certain order, like a certain pattern to... you know, keep the, you know, eating like evil entity from clinging on to you, because the whole idea with ayahuasca is supposed to open like your portal to God. So it was very intense, and I did the ayahuasca, and I didn't think anything was happening, but then I started feeling weird and went outside the temple. It's like a temple in the jungle, and the irony is this thing that I have the biggest trouble with in my life is feeling alone. Like nobody understood me. And I was there with a handler because my first time, people don't know what's going to happen. And my handler somehow got separated from me. So I'm literally in the jungle away from this temple by myself. and, you know, throwing up a little bit. And, you know, because looking at the ants crawling this tree and everything. And while I was there by myself, ironically, like this voice just told me that I'm not alone. And then, like, immediately there was somebody behind me. They came up to me and gave me like a tissue because I was throwing up. It just solidified that no matter for me how alone I feel I am, I'm never really alone. And I didn't really feel that way before the ayahuasca. It's still something I struggle a little bit. It's not like a light switch that went on, you know, on all of a sudden. But that was a very powerful moment that made me realize, you know, even in nature, like I remember like touching a tree like once, and I could kind of sense like what that tree had witnessed the whole time it was there. It was like this weird connection. So yeah, ever since that experience, I've never felt alone.
That's such a powerful teaching. I read a lot of books on plant medicines and entheogens. So just because, I mean, I've never really done any, but I am interested in the intersection between, you know, I went to seminary, I have a master's of divinity, but I grew up reading science magazines because I love science. So where do those two disciplines meet, science and religion? And so you could say, what happened through this plant medicine ayahuasca, which, you know, you could compartmentalize and dissect, right? Oh, it's the certain chemicals in the plant. Scientifically, you can kind of dissect that. But then the experience that it opened you up to, how do you quantify that? How do you dissect that? And those experiences are really there. Sometimes there are no words. You cannot find the words to describe it because everyone's experience is singular for themselves, what they see or what they experience, what comes to them. It's basically the medicine that they need comes to them to kind of help them to understand or purge. There's a lot of purging, as you said, you were throwing up, purge old stories that don't serve them, purge ideas that don't serve the person taking the sacrament. And it's actually really fascinating and really interesting. I've never taken ayahuasca, but I've certainly read a lot of stories about how people's lives were changed. And it is really essential to have a teacher or a shaman who knows what they're doing and is there to actually heal people, who has intention and integrity and is there to kind of facilitate the plant and what it wants to say to each participant. And I love that you shared that you felt alone, because I felt like that a lot. I mean, I felt like an alien in this world. I'm like, I don't understand what's going on here. Like, a lot of this world doesn't make sense to me. And I think a lot of people feel that way. And I was just reading this really interesting, I don't know if you know who the author Philip Pullman is. He wrote an incredible series of books. He's a physicist, but he was an atheist. I mean, he's a physicist at Oxford, I believe, or Cambridge. Anyway, he wrote this series of books, which just took over the entire world. And I just read this incredible story. He's no longer an atheist, and he believes in panpsychism now, which is that everything is conscious. Everything is talking to us. Everything is sacred and has legitimacy. And he said, you know, 20 years ago, forget it. I would have never, but he had a couple of experiences, and he said they came upon him when he wasn't expecting it. And he said for 20 to 30 minutes, he could feel that he was connected to every single thing in the universe. And it felt like he couldn't explain it, but it was so powerful. And he's like, how do you have the words to kind of even say what this feels like, unless someone else experiences something similar? It's beyond, but it changes his entire life from atheist to now believing in panpsychism. And he's like, you know, it's my experience. You know, take it or leave it, but this is how I operate in the world now. And I think having these experiences are so important, whether it's suddenly without plant medicines or with plant medicines, it helps us to understand a different level of reality and our place in that reality, and it can change everything.
Yeah, I agree. And for me, it's, I've tried other plant medicines. I mean, that's one thing, but I've had other experiences, which something told me, an entity told me to do something, you know, a voice inside my head, like, I remember in Hawaii, I like Hawaii. I was hiking this Mauna Loa, the mountain there. I was going this hike. And I normally hike super fast because I'm, after that big goal we talked about, I'm like, I'm going to tag the summit and get back as quick as possible. You know, I'm going to track it on my watch. And that's normally my modus operandi, is to go as fast as I can and get it done. But for some reason, that day, I was hiking. There's a big rock there, and it's a rock you could sit on. And this voice just said, sit on that rock. And I'm like, why do I want to sit on this rock? I just started the hike. It's like not even a quarter mile in. But I paid attention, and I sat on the rock. And you know, and I kept wanting to get up, but something kept me on that rock. And then the distance, I saw somebody walking up. And pretty soon they're like sitting on a rock across from me. And it's this woman, and we started talking, and we started hiking together. And it was a very interesting experience, because I've never experienced something like this. This woman was telling me these, you know, I forgot the way she described it, and I'm hopefully not diminishing what she was saying, but the angels inside of her, or the people speaking through her, were telling her things about me, that I had, you know, trouble with my heart, that I tend to open my heart up too much to get taken advantage of. And then I have a tendency to close my heart and repeat the process. And then that I have this blue aura color about me. And, you know, it's very, and she's just telling me these things, like what is being like channeled through her. And it was like, this is like so bizarre, because I just met this person, and we're hiking together, and our whole conversation was about this kind of stuff. And then at the top of the mountain, she did, I think it's an attunement, but it's supposed to like, you know, connect you to the higher power a lot better. So she did that. What's interesting is she said, I had it done before. And I'm like, what do you mean? And she said, I can tell you had this done before. Because for me, I'm more scientific. I'm like, this is kind of woo-woo, but I'm listening. And I said, yeah, actually, I went to this retreat in California with a shaman, and they did an attunement there, I think it's an attunement there. And she said, yeah, I can tell. And I thought, wow, this is bizarre. So anyway, after that whole experience, I just had a different respect for listening to that voice in my head, because she told me that my purpose on the planet is to be a healer. And I'm like, I don't even know what that means. And she said, you'll find out someday. And then I need to step into it.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I think those, because that's happened to me several times. Just people come up to me and say, I got to tell you something. And it's always been really helpful, but also sometimes totally confusing. And I think to myself, I have no idea what just happened. And what am I supposed to do with this? You know, like, thanks for the knowledge, but what am I supposed to do with it? And it sounds like you're kind of in that space, like you're supposed to become a healer. But what does that mean? You know, like, how do you step into it more intentionally, more conscientiously? But I really appreciate that you listen to that voice, because sometimes when that voice comes and tells me to do something, I get super grumbly. And I'm like, don't talk to me. I'm busy. Like, I'm a monster right now. Like, don't tell me what to do. But I love that you just were like, yeah, okay, I guess I'll sit here. And you were open to the adventure.
Well, what I've realized when I've reflected, that voice has never been wrong. When I've ignored the voice or tried to logically rationalize doing something different or opposite, it never worked out. So when I've listened to the voice, and this, I do this when I make decisions, I think about, and whatever comes to my head, that's the decision I go with, because it's never been wrong for me.
And I love that you give it that kind of respect. I feel like certainly other people can have that same experience as yours, where your intuition, this voice tells you what to do, but they don't take it seriously, or they poo-poo it, or they say, well, let's wait a little bit and see what else comes along. But because you've listened and I think part of what is compelling about your story is that kind of when you were on this hike and you have this, you know, you're very quick on your hikes, I'm going to get this done, I'm going to bust it out. And this voice is like, no, no, just sit here for a little bit. And you did it. So essentially you showed up for that voice. you mm-hmm. listened. And I feel like experiences like that are kind of doorways. So if you showed up, you sat there, you had your experience with this woman, that allows the voice or the energy to know that you take it seriously and you're open for more mystery. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes complete sense. And for me, like, usually if I see somebody hiking, I speed up and try to get away because I want to hike by myself as fast as I can hike. I prefer to be by myself. And when I saw that woman getting closer, I started like getting up and the voice is like, just sit here, calm down, you know? And I was like, I was fighting it a little bit, but I was like, okay, all right, I'm going to sit here and go with this. And, you know, she ended up getting a little bit of altitude sickness. So it's a very slow hike, but the hike wasn't the purpose. It was the experience that the hike allowed to happen. And we're the only two people hiking. This is the middle of nowhere on Mauna Loa. So it's very, you know, transformative as well.
I always describe those experiences as, I'm sure you saw, look at, I'm going back to another movie, okay? Please forgive me. Did you ever see Wizard of Oz with yes. Judy Garland, the old one? And, you know, great Oz the magician, Oz the changer of worlds, is just this guy behind a curtain. And you're like, whoa, yeah. You know, hey, who knew that a guy behind a curtain could be like this powerful? But you absolutely listened to the voice and you got to peek behind the curtain of what's possible. And how beautiful mm-hmm. is that? And so in my experience, you'll probably have more chances to peek behind that curtain. And that's what makes life exciting.
Yeah, 100%. I think, like you said earlier, if you show you're open to something and show up, then more of these things will happen. You know, if you resist it, then because there's a lot of studies about, and I'm more of someone that tries to brute force things in the past versus let things transpire. So I'm trying to balance those, because before, like, I would just try to brute force the hike, but now I'm trying to like realize that that is not the purpose all the time. So I'm trying to like let things unfold more naturally and go with it.
Augustine said, "The world is a book, and those who do not travel read only one page." And honestly, listening to Christian's stories about everything that he's done and what he's risen out of is really difficult and challenging childhood. He's really an inspiration for how to attack life or engage with life and take big, delicious bites out of it. He seems to have faith in life and in himself that everything's going to work out. And I just love that there is adventure everywhere all around him, whether he's climbing a mountain or having a conversation with a stranger in Hawaii. He really does seem to find himself in these unusual places where magic and miracles can happen. Paulo Coelho, author of one of my favorite books, The Alchemist, said, "If you think adventure is dangerous, try routine. It is lethal." And I think I agree with him. Absolutely every day we should be inviting adventure in, asking for magic, and reminding ourselves that miracles are usually just around the corner. I need to thank Christian for being such a gracious guest and for sharing all of his stories and once again reminding me that this world is a beautiful and magical place. Please do remember to rate and review the podcast as well as subscribe so you don't miss one story of why this world is a glorious place. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Christian. Be open to the adventure that is every single day of your life, whether you have a conversation with a stranger or you get to go to someone else's aid if there's an accident, or
if you just find a really groovy book at a bookshop in town. Be open to the adventure, no matter what comes your way, and understand that the adventure and the change that comes with it make this life worth living.